This is an ABC podcast.
Can you be more specific? On ABC Radio Australia.
Bula Vinaka, and welcome to another episode of Can You Be More Pacific? My name is Sarah Nangama, and I'm joined by my co-host, Dean Halitau.
Whakalofalahia to everyone, and welcome to the show. It's great to be here. It's been a while, Sarah. We haven't been
in the studio for a bit.
No, you've had commitments, yes. Which are pretty cool. You get to represent the Wallaroos. So excited for you to see you don the jersey. It was an awesome thing to see, and well done.
Thank you so much. It feels weird to come back off tour. I'm pretty sure you get them, a bit of the post-tour blues.
Yep.
But whilst we were on camp, I was very fortunate to debut for Australia and live out my dreams since I was a 17-year-old lass. It was really special. The only thing that did hinder is that I was so sick when I was in camp. But I'm feeling a lot healthier. I hope I sound a lot healthier.
You sound good. Yeah, you sound fine. Yeah. Back on top of things.
Thank you.
If you could get through a test match feeling unwell, imagine when you're feeling well, how much your level's going to go up again.
Well, that's what I'm hoping so. Because when we were at Suncorp, particularly for my debut, I'm sitting on the sideline and I'm thinking, I have the worst headache. Like, it felt like someone was in my head punching my skull. And every 15 minutes, like, you had to go, like, get up and go warm up. And I nearly had, like, a bit of a fight with our S&C being like, leave me alone. Like, I'm trying to, like, preserve my energy. But no, very special moments and happy to be home. And hopefully get selected to go on the Pacific Four Test Series, which is coming up in a fortnight's time.
Well, fingers and toes are crossed for you. We've got heaps coming up in the show today. We've got a look back at the weekend sport. We've got an interview with Emily Latu, who is the NRL Community Projects Manager, and we've got a new question for You Can Ask That.
Yes, there's a bit going on.
Yes.
Our top story for this week is a very special one. There are Fijian migrant workers who have recently moved over to Barossa to fill some much-needed job vacancies, and they have hit the town in such a positive way.
Yeah, this is pretty cool. They're coming over to obviously to work and to help local industry. Barossa down in South Australia, it's a wine region, and there's plenty of farms. Anyway, they're down there working, earning a quid, helping out local industry, and they're also keen rugby players, so they've signed up for the local rugby side.
Yes, the Barossa Rams, who haven't really done very well in previous seasons, but with the injection of these Fijian players who we know love the game, froth the game, and is so big back in Fiji, they're now on this really positive winning streak, and they've been warmly embraced by the community after each game. They get in a circle and they sing a hymn. So it's very, very special.
I just got like little, like, because you always think about Fijian rugby players or any Fijian national teams and singing hymns after games and really engaging like the fans as well. So I can imagine for local rugby community in Barossa, just really enjoying that different aspect of their games, I guess.
Yeah, it's really cool. And I love what one of the leaders at the club said, is that after the game, these boys are the first to help pack down, and they just bring such positivity and light to the club. So a great feel-good story to top the charts for us this week.
It certainly is. In rugby league, we had round 10 occur over the weekend, which was Magic Round.
Magic Round.
the magic references were done to death over the weekend. But I have to say, I was up there for a couple of days and it was really good in spite of a lot of rain. It was forecast to be torrential and it started that way. It eased off for the last day, but well done to the Brisbane, the ground managers there at Lang Park. They did a great job to get the field in shape, to keep it going for the whole weekend, and they didn't have to do anything other than put the matches on, and it was some wonderful football play. The first match that I'll point out would be the Warriors and South match on Saturday. I think it was the first game on Saturday, and the Warriors have sort of had a really patchy season. They've been smashed a few times. South have probably been underwhelming. And they got off to a really good start, the Bunnies, but it ended up being a tight scoreline in the end because the Warriors came back. It was 32-30. But as we love to see, a couple of the wingers for the South Sydney Rabbitohs, Tane Milne, he scored two tries. And then it's not a Rabbitohs performance without an Alex Johnson try.
Set to the left, they go that way. To Tola, to Ilias, to Walker. Cut out pass to Alex Johnston. That was a thing of beauty from Cody Walker. And he's produced two of them already. Great to see him playing good footy again. 16 minutes, 40 gone, and it's South Sydney doing it in a canter at the moment.
Wow.
It's pretty impressive.
It is impressive. They were in a canter for a while, but like I said, the Warriors came back. They didn't play great, the Warriors, but they did well enough to scrap and fight and try and get a result, and it ended up being a pretty entertaining contest at the end of it. Now, another match across the weekend that it was just a Sunday match. I thought it was going to be a really tight one as well. It was the Roosters versus the Eels, 31-24 to the Roosters. So it does show it was a close game. But one of the players that we love keeping track on because he's a young star, he's come up into first grade quite early, Joseph Suaalii, who's he could still play under 20s. He's still a baby in terms of his age. But
scary to know that he's got such a huge future.
Exactly. But he's a really imposing guy. He's massive, he's strong, he's tough, and he showed his skill set when he scored two tries on the weekend.
Last tackle it is. Roosters up by one. Comes right Keary, crossfield kick. Suaalii the target against Perham. Suaalii leaps into the sky, earns frequent fire points, comes down with it and scores spectacularly. The Roosters head back to increase their lead again.
I love that. The frequent flyer reference is fantastic.
He got so high, Joseph Suaalii. Like he's a good target because he is so tall, but he leapt in the air. It was like an AFL-type catch. He was on the back of Perrin with his knees, and he would have been head over 3 metres, 10 foot. He was that high. So great to see him doing well and, out on that right wing. And the other match to wrap up the weekend, it was the Tigers, my old Tigers, up against the Cowboys. So bit of a 2005 grand final replay. I always mention it when they play, just because I like mention it. Anyway, the Cowboys were too good. They're having a great season. They're sitting, I think, third on the table. 36-12, they beat the Tigers. It was an impressive performance. Murray Taulagi, who we spoke to on the show before, he scored two tries, but he set up a try for Scott Drinkwater that was amazing. There was a shift to their left on last play. He goes over the sideline. He gets tackled in the air by Jackson Hastings. He's about to go into the touch and goal area, and he's about a millimetre away from the ground. He just hoisted over his left shoulder back in the field of play. No one knew what was going on. It came out of nowhere, and then Drinkwater's like, oh, I got the ball.
Putting it down.
Yeah, how easy.
Great athleticism.
Very good athleticism shown there.
Well, thanks, Dean. Turning our attention to the game that matters more. kidding. Super Rugby Pacific hit round 12, and the fixture I want to firstly highlight is Fiji and Drua up against Moana Pacifica. As we know, these two sides have joined the competition as of 2022. It was the first time for them to go up against each other, which they did out at Parramatta Stadium. The final score was 34-19 to Drua. This was an incredible match, but there was so much excitement and anticipation leading up to this. For the reason that regardless of who was going to win or who was going to lose, there were so many Polynesians being able to play the game on a national stage or an international stage, dare I say. So Kopikepu, who is the captain of Moana Pacifica, said after the game, regardless of the result, it's such a significant day for all Islanders because we get to see so many of our men showcase their talent on a stage like that. So it was incredible. I loved the game because Fiji and Drua won, and I just knew that they were going to. They got too much flair and fire, but they are sitting at the bottom of the ladder. So it's not a great result in terms of where they stand, but regardless, it's so good for the game to see these teams go up against each other.
Yeah, so much excitement. I was watching social media in the build-up to this as well, and just seeing, as you say, the Pacific representation in Super Rugby, the whole reason that these teams are brought into the competition because there's a recognition of the talent that exists in the Pacific and also to give them that exposure and create some pathways. So a great moment and, yeah, well summed up.
Yes. And on that note, the Australian government have announced that they will be extending Fijian Drua and Fijiana Drua's involvement in the Super Rugby and Super W competition over the next 3 years. So these teams are not going anywhere, which is great to hear. And last but not least is the Waratahs versus Hurricanes. Now this game was honestly so exciting. The Waratahs were two on the trot, and the Hurricanes, they didn't have a great start to the beginning of the season, but they've come good towards the end. They've won the past five of six leading up into that weekend. And the Waratahs at halftime were up 15-0. So every commentator, including myself, is thinking, okay, we're on here, boys. We are on here. But there's something to be said about the first 20 minutes coming into the second half, particularly up against teams from New Zealand, because that's where they become more dominant. And they certainly came out firing. And as a result of that, the Waratahs lost 18-22. It was such a vibe at Leichhardt. You know, dare I say, rugby union has struggled to engage with its fans over the past decade. But to see the hill properly filled as if it was like a Sunday fixture for the Tigers was incredible.
It's it is becoming a little bit, it pains me to say this because Leichhardt Oval is my favourite place and it's becoming a bit of a rugby hub at the moment.
I'm loving it.
Because of the Tars involvement there.
But they need to take the game back to the suburbs like that because that's where fans want to come and want to spectate. And it was great. And I have a note here from our producer asking, is it a fitness issue?
Third quarter? So the 20-minute lapse, is that the issue?
It could be. It could be. I don't know if it's a fitness thing, but I just think that we need to get ourselves out of that rut. I think the Waratahs probably felt a lot of confidence, and rightfully so. You're up 15-0 against the Hurricanes. But I don't know how they do it. I don't know how. I mean, do you have anything to say to that?
It's a similar thing with in league. Like the third quarter is always, there's a lot of emphasis on that first period after halftime.
Yeah.
If you dip then the game almost gets away from you. And it happens quite a lot in league. So I think maybe it's like a focus thing because you go in after your first 40 minutes, everyone starts generally pretty hard and it's just a bit of a hang in there till halftime. It gets to that point.
Yeah.
And I think maybe after halftime, if you have that little dip where you're relaxed, you recover, if you don't come back out firing like you did for the start of the game, then it can quickly turn, which obviously it did for the Tars.
Yes. And also thoughts to Isaiah Parisi. I believe there's word out there that he's done his MCL, which is a huge loss for the Tars because he's been in incredible form, but that is a minor injury and hopefully he can turn it around ahead of the English test. Cause I know that Dave Rennie has his eye on him.
Well, fingers crossed for Isaiah.
Fingers crossed.
Talanoa time on Can You Be More Pacific?
We're very lucky to be joined in Talanoa time by Emily Latu. She is the NRL Community Projects Manager. She's a good friend of mine. She does wonderful work in the community and abroad. So it's great to have her on the show and talk about what she does. Emily, thanks for joining us on Can You Be More Pacific?
Thank you so much for having me, Malolalei, everyone.
Emily, I'll get into it by asking if you can tell the audience, our listeners, about what you do at the NRL and what it is being an NRL Community Projects Manager.
Yeah, cool. So my role is to manage all the NRL's major community projects. So this includes the NRL Road to Regions, NRL Community Awards, all the measurement and evaluation, so measuring the impact that we're making in the community, and then all the community activations across all major themed rounds, major events, and then working with all our teams across Australia and the Pacific to make sure that we're using rugby league to make a difference in all the communities that rugby league exists.
On that, Emily, how did you get involved in this line of work? It sounds like you get through a lot of important work, but I'm intrigued to know how you, I guess, were attracted to it in the first place.
Yeah, well, growing up, we've always been a family really dedicated to sport. My dad migrated from Tonga to play rugby union here. And then growing up, my sisters and I, we all played netball at Little A's, and then we played rugby league when the girls' competition first started in Sydney. So we played for the Parramatta Junior Eels. So we always loved rugby league. We've always been fans. But I always knew I wanted to work in sport. I just didn't know what I wanted to do. But then when I was in my first year of university, I was doing a Bachelor of Business and Commerce, majoring in sport management. And we had a guy come into our class from the Australian Sports Commission. And it was just there. Me and one of my other friends, we asked him if he knew any contacts in rugby league that we could do volunteer work with. And then he introduced us to a lady called Maria Arthur. And that's where my career kind of started, was when I did volunteer work with her. And she offered me a casual position in the NRL game development department. And I guess it just started from there. So that was in 2011. And I haven't left since.
I love that. You talked a little bit about your dad migrating to Australia. So could you tell our listeners where you are from?
Yeah, both my parents are from Tonga. My dad is originally from Vava'u. That's where his family originates from. And my mum is from Ha'apai and Wainii, proud Tongans. They both migrated here separately and then they met here and then got married and had us kids. So I have five sisters.
Beautiful.
Well, Emily, can you tell us about growing up in Sydney then and I guess your exposure to Tongan culture as you were growing up?
Yeah, so we grew up, so born and raised in Auburn in Western Sydney, spent some time in Blacktown, but spent most of my life growing up in Parramatta. I grew up in a Catholic church, part of a Tongan Catholic community in Auburn called St. John's Catholic Community, part of the Tongan community there. So it was really ingrained in our Tongan community. But it wasn't until I was working in rugby league that I had my passion and love for my culture really ignited. I think there was a bit of time where I, bit of an identity crisis, kind of merging both, you know, the Tongan culture to the Western culture and kind of trying to find my feet. I went to a primary school where I was the only Pasifika person in the whole school. So that was kind of a little bit intimidating. So I think it was during that time I was trying to fit in, and I really didn't connect to my culture as much as I do now. And I really credit that to working and playing rugby league, in being really involved in the culture and really wanting to know more and do more and be part of the, not just the Tongan community, but the Pasifika community, if that makes sense.
It makes a lot of sense. It's a story we've heard a lot from a number of our guests we've had on the show, that exposure to culture and to understand a little bit more about your own identity often comes through sport, and rugby league's really good at doing that, rugby union as well. So it's really good to hear that. I guess one thing that I know about you is that you do carry that that identity through a lot of the work you do. You mentioned that you do work in the community, but working with Pacific communities is something that you're particularly good at and that you've done a lot of over the last few years. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, of course. So I guess where we started a lot of our work with Pasifika communities is from the NRL's In League and Harmony program. So it's a social cohesion program that encourages young people to use rugby league as a tool of connection to better themselves, be better people, do better. And it talks about anti-bullying, ways you can work better as a team, celebrating diversity, celebrating the similarities and differences that exist like it does on a rugby league field. It exists in the community and really celebrating that. And we worked with a lot of Pasifika communities in that program. But in 2016, with the Pacific Test, we introduced the Pacific Youth Summit. And that's when we brought up to 60 young people from across Western Sydney for our inaugural Pacific Test Youth Summit. So really encouraging our young people to connect to their culture through rugby league, whether you're Tongan, Samoan, Fijian, Kiwi. It was using that platform of the Pacific Test to encourage our young people to really connect to their community through the greatest game of all, rugby league.
For all of our listeners joining us, this is Emily Latu. She is the NRL Community Projects Manager. Emily, speaking to you and hearing about how you grew up in Western Sydney and all the work that you are doing in the community, how excited were you to see a Parramatta Eels women's side join the NRLW competition?
It was awesome. I think I've never been more excited for the women's game. I wish I had these opportunities when I was playing 10 or so years ago.
Comeback.
And it was, yeah. Ooh, I don't know if I can run for 80 minutes anymore. But it was so exciting. I still live in the Parramatta area and I'm a diehard Para fan. But it was also exciting to see some of my friends move clubs to play for Parramatta. So Sumaima Thalfa, she's done amazing work in the community with us. And then Tiana Benitani as well. So it was awesome to see some of my Tongan friends kind of move over to Parramatta and rep the team that I love. But just to see the women's game grow from 4 to 6 teams and now 8 in 2022, it's really exciting.
It's very exciting. We're actually members of the Parramatta Eels, Sarah, and our producer, Nelly. We made a pledge to join.
We love Parramatta.
Yeah, so we're Eels supporters, and we'll be renewing our membership for the upcoming season as well. Another thing, Emily, the Pacific Test matches that you mentioned, they're a real feature of the NRL calendar, the international calendar in rugby league, and we're fortunate enough this year for them to be being played again in the second representative round, which is, I think, June 24th, 25th, 26th, around that time. So can you tell us a little bit about what you're looking forward to with that, and I guess some of the work you've done in the past around that? You mentioned the Youth Summit.
Yeah, I'm really excited. So I think I'm pretty sure Tonga is playing New Zealand in New Zealand, so that'll be a really great spectacle. I'd love to go over for that one. But the doubleheader that will happen in Sydney and Campbelltown is really exciting. You'll see Samoa play the Cook Islands, and I think it's such a great platform for the Cook Islands to show what they've got. And then you'll have Fiji and Papua New Guinea. So they're amazing players who are really connected to their culture that will be able to pull on their jersey for the international teams. So that's really exciting. I can't wait to see that happen and bring the culture and football to Campbelltown again. We've had 2 years with no Pacific Youth Summit or Pacific Test, so exciting to bring that back. Unfortunately, we won't have Pacific Youth Summit come back this year, so hoping that is reignited next year. But it will be exciting to see the level of skill on the field, but also the cultural entertainment and passion off the field and all the halftime performances. I'm really excited for that.
Yeah, me too. I've certainly been out at Campbelltown Stadium when we've hosted some Pacific Test matches, and they are so fun to see the stadium packed out with such a mix of cultures, and so many people just get out there to get around the boys. It's such a special evening. So I know I definitely will be there with ABC on that Saturday night. So very excited for it. Emily, you are doing such incredible and important work within the community, and speaking to Hala off air as well, he speaks very highly of you. So I'm sure your name and the work that you're doing is just getting started. So really looking forward to seeing what you do in the future.
Thank you. And I'm excited to see that we have Pacifica programs on radio and TV. So keep up the good work, team.
Yeah, girl. Well, I'm not letting you go that easy. Something that we love to do with our guests is play Tip On. And basically, it's a 60-second questionnaire. And I just want you to say the first thing that comes to mind.
Oh, wow.
It's meant to be fun, lighthearted. And one thing I encourage you to do is don't think too hard.
Okay, sweet.
Amazing. All right, the clock is on. What have you been reading, watching, or listening to lately?
Oh, I've been listening to podcasts lately. I haven't read a lot. My favorite podcast at the moment, I listen a lot to The Squeeze, my news in the morning.
Love it. Who is your most annoying colleague?
Oh, Frank Pulitua.
I was coughing to get Dean's name out of you. Who is your sporting hero?
Oh, I'd say my dad.
What would be your wrestler entrance song?
Oh, I'd say Migos, Is You Ready?
What was your favourite movie as a kid?
A Lion King.
What's something you could eat for a month straight?
Sushi.
Favourite place you've travelled to?
Ooh, Hawaii.
Do you have a hidden talent?
No.
I'm safe. Who would play you in the movie of your life?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't know.
Okay. Scale of 1 to 10, 10 being the best. How good are you at keeping secrets?
10.
10. Oh, she's a chamber of secrets.
I didn't expect anything less.
Rock solid. I want to be your friend. How do we become friends in real life outside of the studio?
Play rugby league, Sarah. And then we'll get Sarah over to rugby league, and then she can do some work with you, Emily.
Yeah, you got to come over to rugby league, Sarah.
All right, say less. Send me a vacancy or something.
Well, Emily, it's been great having you on the show. Thanks very much for taking the time out to join us. Wish you all the best for any of your upcoming projects that you've got on, and I look forward to seeing you in the office.
Awesome. Thank you so much, team.
That was Emily Latu. She is the NRL Community Projects Manager, and we wish her all the best for her upcoming projects.
You can ask that. Your chance to ask what it's really like to be an elite athlete. On Can You Be More Pacific?
It's time for You Can Ask That, our favourite part of the show, where you can ask a former or a current athlete any question that's been burning in your mind. And this week we've got a question from Penny in PNG. This is a good question because a lot of the time in the public, it can go either way. The team can get blamed or the coach can get blamed. And the question is, how much responsibility is on the coach for the performance?
This is a big one. This is a big one. I'm going to say he has about, or she has about 50% influence.
Half the blame?
Half the blame, because the other half is really on the players on the field. Obviously, the job of a coach is to provide a game plan that sees his or her team succeed, and it's up to the team to execute it, regardless of whether you believe in it or not, whether you think it's the right call or not. It is up to the however many players on the field or the pitch or whatever the field of play is to bring it home. So it's hard, particularly when you think about the likes of Trent Barrett, who has been under a huge amount of scrutiny because of the way that the Bulldogs have performed in recent times. But is it really all on him?
No, it's definitely not all on one. I reckon it's hard to put a percentage on it, because if the team isn't playing the style that suits a victory, like you still need to execute a game plan that's effective. So if they've been given a game plan that isn't effective, and I'm not saying this is the case with the Bulldogs, but if you're given a game plan that isn't effective and you lose as a result, well, then the game plan generally comes from the coach, even if you execute it poorly or whatever. But I think that it sort of moves around a bit, like the responsibility. If there's effort areas that you lapse in that lead to a loss or consecutive losses, and the players are reproducing those lack of efforts every week, well then, yeah, you can blame the players probably more for that, because they're not going out there and applying themselves. And that's, you know yourself that when you're in teams, if the attitude's not there and the effort's lacking, well then you rarely get the results, right? So I think in those situations, it rests more with the players. And unfortunately, the coach is responsible for motivating and getting players up and trying to get them to a point where those attitudes and those efforts are repeated week in, week out. It is hard to not put it all on the coach, but there is a fair bit of responsibility on them, unfortunately.
There's so much that happens in the inner sanctum of the team in the lead up to our game. So I think the public doesn't necessarily see the selections, whether it's right or wrong, whether the opposition that they're going up against, whether they're choosing the right players or not. And then you talk about the effort areas, and there can, and you know, particularly being camp, there's also so much distraction as well when you're preparing for a match. And I think when you think about all of the things that come into play that contribute to a performance, it's hard, because you have to, at the end of the day, you have to point the finger at someone if your team's not performing. And unfortunately, it has to be the coach. So it's hard, but there is, to be fair, regardless win or loss, it's on your coach.
Yeah.
And regardless whether it is his fault or not, it's really hard, because they have to cop the brunt of everything.
Yeah, I think that's the point that you just made there. It's the unfortunate reality is a coach will be the first person to wear it if there's just repeated bad performances. And we've seen that with the Bulldogs this week with what's happened for Trent Barrett. So good question, Penny. Tough one. I don't think we really answered it wholly and solely.
No.
It's just that it's unfortunate that it lands with the coach most of the time.
Yes. And it's a complex one.
Yeah.
Thank you, Penny. I really do hope that we answered your question in some way. But to anyone else, if you do have a question, please feel free to hit us up on Instagram. My handle is at Sarah Nangama, and you can find Dean at Dean Halitau.
Can you be more Pacific on ABC Radio Australia? Oh my God.
You're with Sarah and Dean, talking all things sport across the Pacific.
Don't go anywhere. We've still got our favourite socials, and we tackle the top headlines in the world. Time to change the pace as we head over to PNG for a report from Peter Pasal.
We're talking rugby league today. I have PNG National Rugby League Competition Manager, Ora Gairo. Ora, first of all, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Peter. Thank you for having me on the show.
Just tell us, what are the changes that you've enacted in this competition for 2022?
The competition has been going on well. We've had good games in the added new venue. So Goroka is an added venue to the competition for this year, where Wabeg, Means and Lei, as well as Kimbe, Kokopo and Port Moresby and Lei, that have been traditional venues. Goroka was restored, but then the venue was removed again after an incident with the referee, with a player assaulting the referee. So that has gone under the spotlight of the judiciary. Judiciary coming hard and banning the player for 10 years, and the venue has been indefinitely put off. But that is dependent now on the appeal by the Lanis, and whichever way the appeal decision is made by the appeals committee, that will determine the future of the particular player, the media officials involved in the assault, as well as the venue, whether it continues on for next week. But the games have been good. We have a long season this time round, with 50% crowd capacity allowed by the Pandemic Management Committee. We have 17 rounds this season, with four rounds of finals, with a grand final to be played on the 25th of September this year.
I've noticed some of these clubs are really taking this, the game seriously. They're getting a bit more professional. Gulf Vissel, they do a lot of posting on their Facebook page, as well as Potmos and Vipers. In terms of professionalism, what have you noticed from the clubs in the Digicel Cup?
Yeah, a lot has been done. Each of the franchises have realized there's a potential for market, the team's ability to market for sponsors and their reputation in terms of gaining that extra revenue for themselves to sustain themselves in the competition. So there have been a lot of sponsors now attracted to almost all the teams across the nation. So, yeah, teams have been able to put up their media platforms and have started doing merchandising as well, which is a source of revenue for them. Apart from contracting players, we don't have a player ceiling at the moment. So there's some one or two or three teams that are dominated by very good players, former Kumuls or current Kumuls, and former Antas. Those teams have been more or less been able to financially sustain those players and the bulk of those key players that are former Kumuls and the Antas. So, yeah, that's something that the NRLC has to work on in terms of evening out the competition and making sure there's a balance across the board with all the 12 franchises.
And what about the refereeing, the officiating? You know, sometimes... I think it's pretty commonplace here to get upset with the officiating because sometimes referees get the play wrong or we don't have the benefit of video replay and things like that. But what is the PNG NRLC doing to ensure that referees are as best prepared to officiate matches and ensure that there's a level of competency and the fans and the players and the team management and all the stakeholders can say, yeah, we're satisfied with what they're doing. They're doing a good job to manage the games so we can get a good product out for the fans.
Yeah, Peter, that's a good question. With the referees, we're doing a lot of work behind the scenes with the referees in terms of their preparations for each of the rounds. They're undergoing training by a certified SNC accredited trainer with the PNG Olympics team. Nelson Stone is behind all the training here. For all the referees here in Port Moresby, we've got someone that is doing the training in Agen, the other person that's doing the training in Minsk, and Kokopo and Lae as well. So we've given initiatives to the referees as well in terms of training allowance for them. We've lost our sponsors for this year in terms of financing their programs and all that, but the competition is able to manage that and ensuring quality of referee through reviewing of videos by the referee coordinator. And the weekly, we're ensuring videos are captured for all the games all throughout the different centers for each round. So we have upgraded the camera facility here at and the different angles of viewing at the NFS with seven cameras now. Before there were only two or three around that. But we have quite a few angles now. We've improved with the bunker refereeing. We've included a bell system for the six more with the current rule changes. We've adopted a couple of the current rule changes, not all of the current rule changes, which NRL is a is practicing right now, which International Rugby League Board adopts from the NRL as well. So those that have been, that come under the International Rugby League Board, the NRLC or PNG, the Digicel Cup is adopting. And by way of training and capacity building, we have a coordinator, a former international referee, Paul Wani, who has left refereeing, is now the coordinator of all the referees now. So he's looking and
he's
full-time and building the capacity of the referees for each of the regions. He's also seconded to the PNG RFL to help out in terms of capacity building there as well.
Are we bringing anyone from Australia, former referees like Shane Hayden comes around here quite frequently?
We will bring someone. Hopefully Shane comes over this year to help train the referees again this year.
maybe one or two, or two times this year just to get the referees up to par.
Okay, final question, and this one is, I guess, going to the heart of the sustainability of this competition. It's semi-professional. Clubs actually pay players a certain amount, a match fee, and the setups are almost professional. They have their own home grounds, training, strength and conditioning, coaching. Everything has to be done to a certain level. Is the NRLC, does it make any money? Is it able to sustain itself in terms of putting a product out there and earning a revenue off it? Or is this something that's just done to provide the highest level of rugby league, and then the PNGRFL gets the talent from that competition? How can this competition be sustainable?
That's a good question, Peter. The ability for this competition to be sustainable basically comes through the organic revenues that we are working on right now. The organic revenues are through sources that we want to capture apart from sponsorship revenue that is coming. So we're working in close association with the PNGRFL as well, with Chairman Sandy Saka and CEO Stanley Ondina, in ensuring the revenue streams that are coming into the game, especially at the Diesel Cup level, is increased. I mean, areas where we really need to, and we've worked on, and has really helped us in our revenues in 2021 was the corporate hospitality. So corporate hospitality for the games, especially here at the NFS, has really improved and boosted our revenues. That's almost around $2 million last year raised from corporate hospitality and gate takings and all that. So we are going into merchandising of all our clubs, jerseys and polos and all that stuff. So replica jerseys and all that. So we're looking at with the renewal of the sponsorship agreement, we're looking at the broadcast rights as well to be split. So that's something that the new sponsor that comes in, comes on board at the end of this year. With Digicel, our major sponsor that has been sponsoring us for the last 11 years, has stated that they want to continue, which is good from Lona.
And obviously when you get all the fans filling up the venues, then also be good.
That's right, yeah. So we're working with the fans to come in, improve certain aspects of, even ticketing as well, maybe lowering prices, making sure a lot more people come. And there's a club membership that I want to introduce this year. So if anyone wants to be part of the Diesel Cup club membership, pays a certain amount and comes and has his ticket or a ticket.
Other privileges.
And other privileges and stuff for the rest of the year. So, quite a few recommendations been made. We're actually selling the real estate over here at the NFS to those corporate houses out there. We have the vomitories, we have the tunnels, we have the disabled bays, the different stands are up for grabs. I've sold the two scoreboards. So yeah, all these are for grabs by all corporates out there that are interested in coming to support the game.
All right, thank you very much for your time. This has been great, giving us the lowdown on the PNG NRLC for the season 2022. All right, Dean and Sarah, it's back to you in the studio.
Thanks, Peter. It's great to hear that the professionalism is going up in PNG Rugby League, the local competition, and also that there's support. It sounds like there's a bit of support coming from Australia as well.
It's so important, and we know that the Kumuls are so competitive whenever they get the chance to play in a test match. So the fact that they're putting a lot of emphasis on developing this game at grassroots level is timely, and I think we're only going to see good things come from it.
Well said.
Can you be more specific? Keeping it social.
Sarah, it's time to dive into some of our favourite socials from the week, as we often do. You're always on your socials, aren't you?
You having a dig, lad?
No, I'm asking, are you?
Yeah,
send
I am.
Send me dig, yeah.
Screen time is on the up and up.
Okay. What have you got for us this week?
This week, I have Joe Tarpanier, who plays for the Canberra Raiders. He clocked his 150th match, 28 years old. It is a huge achievement. What was really heartening is that after the game, his family in the stands, including some of his teammates, including an opposition player from the Sharks. No. Let me do that again. Yeah, that's right. Opposition player from the Sharks joined in to do a special haka for him.
Awesome!
So special.
Very special. How funny, you watch, you see the footage, everyone just reaches for the, like, reaches for their phones and just wants to capture it. It shows how much people do love seeing a little bit of display of culture. And well done to Joseph on reaching that milestone. It's, like you said, it's a huge achievement at 28 years of age, and he's having a great season at the Raiders. He's such a handful of a player.
So much to come. And also on the Canberra Raiders note, I want to make a quick mention of Noah Nujuku, who has been inducted into the Canberra Raiders Hall of Fame. He was an absolute menace in his day, and it's so great to see him receive such an acknowledgement as such.
Good shout, Sarah. He was a great player, Noah, for the Canberra Raiders. Loved watching him in the early 90s, and my dad was a massive fan of his.
So I love that.
Good to see him acknowledged that way.
What did you find when you dusted your phone and used Instagram and had to update it to the latest software because you haven't used it in about a decade?
I've got automatic updates, so I don't have to worry about that stuff.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that's pretty savvy for you.
Yeah.
What do you find?
Well, I went to the Sky New Zealand Instagram page, and they've got a clip up from Bailey Mez, who's a goal attack for the Waikato Bay of Plenty Magic. They play in the ANZ Championship over in New Zealand in the Premium Netball competition. Now, she has come up with a play similar to Murray Taulagi's from last weekend. Well, he probably copied her because she's done this a few times now, but she's going out of play. She gets to collect a loose ball, and she just tosses it over her head and scores a goal.
Bit of work for Mikanasa. The chicken come forward a little bit more. She's just getting caught on the body on Karaka.
Ah, she's done it again.
It's her trademark.
I wonder if she practices that.
I don't think she believes it herself.
I certainly think it was just meant to keep the ball alive.
Oh, great work.
Oh, big up. Oh, no way! No way!
I love that you can sense the excitement in the commentators' voices as well.
She has to have practiced that, because both times she was I'm sure she was aiming for the goal, just flicks it over her head and bang, straight in.
That's like, she's like the Quade Cooper of netball.
Yes.
Good, comes through clutch.
Good reference. I like that.
In the ruck. Tackling the tough headlines in sport on Can You Be More Pacific?
This week in the ruck, we start with really sad news. Andrew Symonds, he passed away earlier this week in a very tragic car accident.
Yeah, tragic indeed. And, you know, off the back of Australian cricket, had two losses, Rod Marsh and obviously Shane Warne, so really significant people in the game of cricket. And Andrew Symonds equally, someone that was pretty loved by his teammates and by the Australian public. He was such a character. Probably a memory that's etched in a lot of people's minds when he took out a streaker on the field as he was batting at the time, and he's just dropped a shoulder in to the streaker. It was a massive hit. So, you know, that does ring well in people's mind. But he was such a great cricketer as well, all rounder, represented for a number of years, and turned his hand to commentary afterwards. So, you know, thoughts and prayers with Andrew Symonds' family and friends through a pretty difficult time.
Yes, well said, Hala. In lighter news and turning our attention to the NRL, the Cherrington sisters, being Kennedy and Ruben, have announced their signing to the Parramatta Eels for the 2022 NRLW season.
Yeah, this is pretty exciting for the Eels. We know how good Kennedy Cherrington is. She's represented at state level, and she's such a character, but she's a fearsome player, and she was a huge signing for the Eels for season 2021. To be able to bring now her sister over, there's a fair bit of excitement around the club, I dare say, about having two Cherringtons in your roster.
Yeah, there's a bit going on in the Cherrington family at the minute. I know them both quite personally, and for a very, very long time they have been talking about the chance or the opportunity to one day play together. They lived in Perth originally, and there isn't a lot that happens in the West Coast, so their whole family shifted over here to Sydney last year, and Ruben is incredibly talented. She's a hooker. She's got a kick. She wears purple headgear, and I'm sure we're going to see that on the stage this upcoming season. But speaking to Kennedy earlier this week, they are both just so excited to finally get the opportunity to play in some rep colours together.
Even more reason for us to renew our 2022 membership.
Yes, and also if anyone from Parramatta Eels admin is listening, please send our passes through on time next season. On the note of it, David Kidwell, who is the assistant coach, has dropped a bit of a bombshell this week.
Bombshell indeed. Yeah, he's leaving the Eels, and he's been there for a few seasons now. I've seen them go from last place to third, fourth, competing in finals.
Top four,
yeah. So he's been a big part of their turnaround as a club. And Kitty, a former teammate of mine, he's taken up a role with Argentina in their rugby team as they press towards the World Cup.
Yes, so he'll be joining Michael Checker, who is or was the Wallabies coach and has now taken on the Argentinian side. This is huge. You almost don't know what conversations happened or how they got in touch with each other. I'm intrigued, but it's also very exciting to be able to see him switch codes and take up a really important role, as you said, for the preparations of World Cup.
Yeah, this is it's big. I think they maybe met through Japanese rugby. Just reading a little bit on the
Japanese rugby.
Yeah, a preparation previous that Japanese rugby was. Anyway, they crossed paths through the rugby circles. Czech has done some work in league with the Roosters, but they've been talking about it for a few years. He's probably been picking David's mind about his defensive strategies and stuff, and it's just evolved into this. You're going to come coach for Argentina with me.
An incredible opportunity, and we wish him all the best. We touched on this man a little bit earlier, Trent Barrett.
Yes,
I'm just going to open the floor and let you run this one.
Well, no, there's nothing to run. Like there was whispers about this was from across the weekend at Magic Round. They've obviously had a really tough 18 months with Trent as the head coach. Haven't had a lot of results. I think he's won 5 games in the time that he's been there. So it's been a fairly unsuccessful period for him and the club. And there was whispers over Magic Round that there was going to be an emergency meeting of the board to discuss the future of their head coach. Before they got to that point, Trent had made the call himself. He decided to stand down as the head coach, which is sad. I'm not too sure of the conversations that happened behind the scenes, whether or not there was, hey, Trent, maybe you should just step down before you push type conversations. But never like to see anyone lose a job. I've seen a few coaches be sacked before, and it's they put a lot of time and effort into what they're doing. So it's not great. The results haven't been there for the Bulldogs, so no doubt that was something that weighed heavy on himself, and he just jumped before pushed, like I said.
Is there any whispers, because you are the NRL man, of any place that he may go to next?
I'm not too sure where he'll go to next. I think if you're
rugby union,
maybe
he could, coach.
He could definitely.
No, we don't want him.
Kidding. But I think a lot of head coaches, when they do lose their job, they're fairly burnt for a little while. So
yeah, it's a lot.
Yeah, and not only is it them, but their families have to sacrifice a lot for them to take on those roles, because they are so all-consuming. I dare say he's going to take a bit of time off and reassess. For the time being, Mick Potter has been announced as the interim coach for the Bulldogs, who was a former coach of myself and your brother at the Tigers. Mick's a really fantastic guy. He's been in the game for a long time, and he played for the Canterbury Bankstown Bulldogs, won 2 premierships there. So a bit of old school going back to the club in that regard, and we'll be interesting to see how they go this week against my other old team, the Tigers.
God, all your old teams just playing each other one after the other. But it's not all kind of settled in NRL camp, because Brett Naden has also made headlines this week.
Well, that's the funnier, well, not the funnier, but the interesting part of the rest of this is that
the cherry on top.
Brett Naden switches from the Bulldogs to the Tigers on Tuesday afternoon, literally minutes before the team deadline for announcement. So the teams get announced. And at 4 o'clock, and Brent's listed with the Tigers, people are scratching their heads because this hasn't been announced by the clubs yet. Because it was like literally happening minute by minute, like a few, I think even in the last minute or two before the teams went live, the deal gets done, gets across the line, and Brent's a Tiger. So people would have been
going, so chaotic.
They would have thought that there was a typo,
yeah,
or that
100%.
Someone entered the information, because he's on the other side. And it was interesting to say the least, but Brent's a quality player, and the Tigers need outside backs, and the Bulldogs are happy to let him go.
Yeah, a bit going on there. Well, congratulations to Naden to be able to secure that, and it'll be interesting to see what he does in Tigers colours.
I'll be out there on Friday night, so I'm looking forward to
So we can hear it straight from the source.
Yes.
Hot off the press. I'll be following you on Twitter. Wait, do you even know what Twitter is?
It's a blue one, isn't it?
No, the red one. Nah, I'm kidding.
I actually doubted myself there.
Hashtag Hullet Cup.
Hull Cup. Let it be a thing. And last but not least, Blackpool striker Jack Daniels has become the first active professional male footballer in England to come out as gay in more than 30 years. This is a huge, huge moment for sport.
Huge moment for sport. And I guess the instigator for this for him was Adelaide United's Josh Cavallo over here in Australia. He came out last year to the public, to his teammates, to everyone. It was something that had been weighing heavily on his own mind and something that he battled with talking about publicly. And it was a pretty brave step for him to do that. It's a shame that we have to have these moments where people have to say something because it's a thing that they're dealing with and that they feel like they need to hide it in the first place. But Josh did that and it gave Jake the courage to do it himself over in England. So it's great that Jake was able to do that. And it just shows that the acceptance in amongst sport is great, and soccer is an inclusive game, as are a lot of the sports that we play as well.
Yeah, it just also goes to show that bravery reckons bravery, and for one player to be able to stand up and do that has encouraged someone across the globe. And one thing that we do enjoy about sport is that how inclusive it is, and so to see England football throw their support behind him like they should and how they have is immense. And so you can only hope that it inspires other athletes to feel like they can come forth unapologetically and wholeheartedly.
Pacific on ABC Radio Australia.
Well, Dean, that's all we have time for.
It is, but if you missed the show or you just want to listen to the magic again, it'll be replayed on Friday, 2 p.m. PNG time. We can find all our episodes on the Radio Australia website or wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Bye there.
It's all here.
Can You Be More Pacific? An ABC sport production for ABC Radio Australia.
This program has been funded by the Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade.